Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 21st on the West Coast, July the 22nd on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zones. Also, like to say hello to all the folks that are listening to us either live or on a recorded delay. Those folks with Blog Talk Radio and Wind Talkers Radio around the planet. Thank you so much for participating in the program with us. I hope we continue a long relationship together in bringing out the truth. Well, what shall we talk about tonight? I brought on the show tonight the better half of a publishing editing duo. These are the publishers of the Idaho Observer I'm referring to, and I was fortunate enough a couple of years ago to meet them and present my research to them, and I've been writing articles on occasion for the paper. And 2 weeks ago we had Don Harkins on the air, and tonight we have his wife, Ingrid Castle. With that, I welcome Ingrid back to Evident Footprints. Ingrid, hello.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me on your show, Don. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Yeah, and when you say better half, you know, I think that term is bantered around a lot. We're fairly equal halves, actually, on some respect, but he is the creative genius and he is the head of the household. So I just want you to know that for clarification, but I do handle the business end of things. So, you know, just for clarification, he is the business genius, and I consult with him regularly on everything.
Well,
and
he makes
the final decisions.
Yeah, you understand I'm just using a colloquial expression when I say that.
Yes,
of course.
I know, but I just want to clarify for anyone listening here, you know, regarding our relationship.
You are also the founder of Vaccination Liberation Organization, and that's really some of what, if not all, of what we're going to talk about tonight. And I wanted to start out by mentioning something that just came to my attention today. You know, I've had my head buried in research and writing and rewriting and writing and looking at photographs and all of that stuff in the processing of this Three Stooges piece. And so I've not kept up as much as I'd like to with a lot of the things that are going on. And I understand that a lawsuit was filed or is about to be filed. Let's say it's an injunction, maybe we can call it, against forced vaccinations. And it's filed by a team of people in the medical profession, Jane Burgermeister, Dr. Atru Ott, Dr. Rebecca Carley, Dr. Bill Deagle, and Alexander S. Jones. I wonder if that's the Alexander S. Jones we're all familiar with.
Well, I should clarify that they're actually not working as a team. There is a little bit of history there. I'm not sure if it's actually appropriate for the air, but I know that Dr. Bill Deagle and Truod and many people were included in emails with Jane Burgermeister. She was determined to file this lawsuit and gleaned a lot of information from both Bill Deagle and Truod. And her document grew and grew and grew. In fact, she wanted to put every frickin' detail that she could in there. And when I first saw it, it was about 50 pages, and I downloaded it. I still have it in my computer if you want to see it. But after she wanted it, you know, for general review and edit, and after the first two pages, I found myself changing every sentence for both clarity, accuracy, and, you know, general grammar. And I thought, this can't be a journalist filing this because the writing would be much cleaner. and mm-hmm. her fact-checking would be much cleaner. I mean, it seemed like a rush job, and for it to be that long and unwieldy, I needed to move on to other projects. And in the meantime, we've all wondered if there's actually proof of her filing. And that is something that's coming out now, like, is there actual proof? Well, so far she's never provided, you know, I mean, you could easily scan in with today's technology the proof of filing. I mean, you do get paperwork, the proof of filing. She mm-hmm. can scan that in and email it. She refuses to do so. So this is, and also for a lot of people it's like, oh good, it's taken care of. At least our court system will have to deal with this before they initiate forced vaccination. Well, sorry to tell your listeners, what the court system is owned by the same people that are controlling, you know, the whole mass production of vaccines for every man, woman, and child on this planet. So, you know, when we have the debt-based money system that we have in place today, and everyone is held liable or chattel, you know, in lieu of that debt, we do not have any rights, and they've already passed laws, you know, to, you know, coerce everyone into receiving these mandated vaccines. In fact, our Health and Human Services Secretary has gone ahead and purchased 600, well, at least has an order in for 600 million of the swine flu pandemic vaccines, two of the vaccines for every man, woman, and child in the United States. And they are very on, well, they're on fast track with their program for sure. And a lot of people may not know the history of this. I wanted to kind of, you know, highlight some of that. Through the World Health Organization, which is a, you know, really a branch of the United Nations, they had in 2005, they updated and revised their international health regulations. And all 194 United Nations, state nations, you know, member state nations, I'm sorry, had to comply with this revision. And that was, needed to be done by June 2007. They were asked to be in compliance and at least initiate legislation and this sort of thing that would make them in compliance. And some of the aspects of the international health regulations that you can go to the World Health Organization website and see those regulations, but it would enable, you know, all the infrastructure to be in place to effectively counter a nuclear accident, let's just say, like Chernobyl, or a chemical release, or, you know, Exxon Mobil, you know, crashes their Valdez or, you know, something in the ocean. But, you know, instead it's like a railroad track, you know, that is carrying some horrible chemical stuff, like maybe a lot of dioxin in a whole area of maybe 200 square miles of contaminated. This is what these health regulations are about, not just a pandemic, okay? So the health regulations encompass how the infrastructure is to be built in a country to respond. And so there could be, let's just a biological attack, you know, as they thought with smallpox, that, you know, maybe these Middle Eastern countries are going to be as savvy as we are with our laboratory work, and they were going to release, you know, smallpox or some biological weapon. And everyone would get sick, and then, you know, there need to be countermeasures. Well, of course, the only countermeasures that are in the pockets of the WHO and the banksters, of course, are the pharmaceutical industry. So no countermeasures are ever sought from alternative health communities. You know, we're not talking about, you know, colloidal silver or, you know, as a lens product is OxySilver or anything that we know is extremely effective in, you know, detoxification and regenerating the body. We're talking about the allopathic medical paradigm being shoved down our throat in terms of countermeasures, and the vaccine paradigm has to be preserved at all costs. So that's why they're doing this development right now. of all these vaccines. Now, you can get into another deeper layer is that these meetings have been going on, you know, the G8, the G20, the Bilderberg meeting, the CFR, and one of the main topics at these meetings is the importance of creating this swine flu vaccine for this pandemic and souping up this pandemic, because for them, they're at the end of the road and they need to reduce the population of the planet. And so that is the end game, and it's happening right now because the laws are in place. We have BioShield 2 that released any manufacturer of a countermeasure to any of the drugs or vaccines that they produce to unleash on the populace in this country regarding, you know, the declaration of a pandemic. And a pandemic, it would be basically defined as an infectious disease agent that is running rampant and can't be contained.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like, you know, like what they would constantly refer to as the 1918 flu as a pandemic, something that, you know, spreads rapidly and a lot of people die. But through excessive research, you know, we find that all of these, quote, pandemics in history that they like to cite have been induced by vaccines themselves. And, like, for instance, like in the 1918 pandemic, it was started at Fort Riley in Kansas with the new typhoid vaccine. And they called it the Spanish flu, and there's, like, history with that. But what, rather than go into, you know, all of that kind of detail, there's some aspects of the 1918 flu pandemic that many of your listeners may not know. But Bayer, who is part of, you know, the whole IG Farben protected pharmaceutical industry in Germany during World War II, is fairly infamous. But Bayer... it was called Bayer at the time, and they had just figured out synthesizing aspirin. And the doses that they were giving people for anyone that came down with the 1918 influenza, which, you know, called the Spanish flu, anyone that came down with it, they, when they sought treatment, they were overdosing them with aspirin. And the amounts they were giving, because they were really experimenting on people, they didn't know really how many, you know, milligrams, micrograms, or whatever, of the product was going to be effective or not effective or whatever. So anyhow, most people died of liver failure, hemorrhaging in the lungs, the inability to breathe, all this stuff, all these symptoms basically of an overdose of aspirin. And when we, you know, further research revealed that they were actually giving them, you know, we're talking like 20 times, you know, a, quote, safe dose of what would be given to me.
I
mean, an excessively high amount. And the flu never actually materialized in people that were never vaccinated. And the naturopaths and homeopaths had a booming business, and they were saving a lot of people that were not being dosed with aspirin. But if they had already been dosed with aspirin, it was much harder to try to save them. So those, most of their patients died if they had already been overdosed with aspirin. But if they were able to reach them first, they were able to save them, despite the fact that they had also been vaccinated. And the whole vaccine machine started going real intensely at that time. And then Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, through her research, she found that also during World War One, they were doing the first chemical warfare experiments with mustard gas, and very high levels too. I mean, you know, we're just reaching the industrial chemical age at that point, at the turn of the century, and people didn't know how potent this stuff actually was. And so there was a lot of dosing with these chemicals. You know, we know about the DDT with Silent Spring, and you know, different things. I mean, even the polio epidemic was clearly linked to DDT. But anyway, that's a whole other side venue there, and I tend to do that, so you need to bring me back on track.
Oh, okay. I do want to make a comment and then, you know, pose a question. Here we have, and I'm just going to rattle off what comes to mind. We have the poisoning of our water with the byproduct of aluminum manufacturing, these fluorides, plus many community water supplies are tainted with things like recycled birth control pills and mm-hmm. Lord knows what else. You probably mm-hmm. got beta blockers in there and every kind of antibiotic you can imagine and every kind of drug that doesn't make it through the filtering systems that they use, which is basically chlorine and lime. And then we have depleted uranium that's flown around the planet, that's settling on everything. And then we have chemtrails. And why is it that the World Health Organization, and I'm asking a rhetorical question, mm-hmm. and the UN not take an interest in that? Of course, my findings are that they're totally behind it, that yes. they are equal participants in this. And that these pandemics are hoaxes. We're not trying to fearmonger here. We're just dealing with it as it is. All of these diseases, as the vaccines are created in labs. And they're mutations of either ancient or older diseases that they've dug up from tombs and caskets and what have you. And experimented on over and over and over again. And there's this magical word that comes up. It even comes up with the obfuscation of public records. It's the word seal. The Satanists use the sealing ritual for their black magic and their witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And these vaccines and the medicines have to be sealed, okay, under the pretext of being safe, when in reality the products themselves are not safe. And sealing them sort of puts this closure on the magical aspect of what they're doing. What are your feelings
about that?
Right, because
they're very much into the occult. That's a very interesting aspect. In fact, you brought up a lot of interesting aspects. And I have to admit that I like to focus more on naturopathic principles, on how the body works. Mm-hmm. And what they're constantly doing is poisoning the terrain.
Yes.
Poisoning our air, food, and water, and and then diverting our attention from the poisoning of the air, food, and water, which is really the ultimate cause of our sickness, and our processed food, and living out of touch with the natural world that God gave us for our sustenance, and then diverting our attention to the cause of disease being these microorganisms. And these microorganisms, I tend to call pathogens because there's different kinds of mm-hmm. microorganisms, and most of them are actually beneficial. I mean, even some of the ones we call pathogens are actually beneficial. They stimulate a detoxification process in the body. But generally, the pathogens that we would associate with disease live on morbid matter in the body, toxic matter that has accumulated and has not been eliminated properly. So when one of these, viruses, even if they've recreated it in a lab, they start proliferating in the body, mutating, changing form. I mean, they are pleomorphic, which means form changing. They aren't monomorphic like that. That's the whole basis of the vaccine paradigm, by the way, is that these specific germs that cause disease are monomorphic or form fixed, and they actually aren't, which is why there's so many different varieties of a measles virus, and that's why there's these lawsuits with the MMR vaccine being implicated with autism, because it was a specific type of measles virus that is used in the vaccine that is causing these problems in the children in their gut. So, this monomorphism, pleomorphism, the form fixed versus the form changing needs to be actually addressed when we're talking about this, just because, we're talking about the mutation of these viruses that they're saying is going to protect us from the swine flu. And it's absolutely ludicrous that any injection of known poisons, because it's not just the foreign protein that's cultured in animal tissue that sheds RNA and DNA and all that other stuff, that's a problem, and that's actually foreign proteins and actually toxic, but it's the formaldehyde and the aluminum and the, you know, thimerosal, which is 49.6% ethyl mercury, and you know, on and on. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, toxic products that are put into these vaccines that aren't censored by the tonsils, aren't censored by the liver. Penetrating the skin. I mean, if you're exposed to anything in the air that's airborne, you know, you would eliminate it naturally, or you would get sick through the normal detoxification process. If you were to take any of these vaccines and actually swallow it or spread it on your piece of toast, I mean, you would probably get diarrhea or throw it up, you know, depending on the level of toxicity and how healthy your body is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, none of this stuff would get directly into you. You know, think of a snake bite. I mean, when you have a, if you have a snake bite, it's foreign proteins. It's a type of poison. What do you do, Don? If you have a snake bite, what do you do?
What do I do? I run like
hell. What does anyone do? I mean, what's the common first aid? Huh? The first aid procedure.
No. Well, they usually tell you, you learn this in the cowboy movies, you apply a tourniquet above the bite to keep it from moving up into your bloodstream, you know, up to the heart.
Exactly. You want to keep it out of your blood, well, I mean, keep it from moving, and you want to pull it out of the bloodstream, right? You don't want to poison your bloodstream, right?
That's correct. Now, I learned that from Walter Brennan, actually. I could have done it in his voice. But Gosh, Dan, I got a snake bite. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, what do? We do repeated injections of this, and we don't even have the sense to suck the poison out of our system as fast as we can.
Yeah.
You know, so or block it from spreading. We actually keep doing these repeated doses, and as you can see, the result is that we don't have any healthy children unless they aren't vaccinated. And then, you know, the parents are so scared today to admit that their child hasn't been vaccinated that they often lie about it. And I'll never forget even going to a restaurant here locally. There was this beautiful little baby. Oh, she was about a year old. Anyway, I looked at the baby, made eye contact. It was a really healthy baby, had great eye contact, and I said, oh, it's so refreshing to see an unvaccinated child. And the mother was literally startled that I could tell, and it was like a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is sick. I mean, this is sick. But you can. You can tell a child that hasn't been, had their neurological system damaged to the point that they don't make clear eye contact, and their spiritual nature is totally suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take it another level now. What and the baby's name was? No, it's just it.
I didn't go that far. I don't think she wanted to share that much with me, okay? She did admit it, though, okay?
No, I'm just kidding. We are in a state right now, you know, the senior citizens have been so used to getting a shot for this, medicine for this, and, you know, I lost my father last April 1st, and I've been talking to my mother about this thing, you know, because every year I was away, my mom and dad were getting flu shots. And
oh,
I said, I said, you've got to really pay attention now because this is very serious.
Yes.
Do not get a shot. Do not get a flu shot. I don't care what your doctor tells you. I don't care how he tries to scare you. Do not get one. Simple, okay? I've heard, I wonder if you could verify this for the listening audience. Now, you mentioned two shots. And in my mind, I'm going, okay, the first one shuts off the immune system. The second one is the disease. And then the third shot was to be a kickstart for the immune system to just go ballistic. In other words, it won't be able to compete with
I
with
think you've
the,
read too much of Jane Burgermeister's site.
I haven't read a thing.
Well, actually, that's one of the things that she has on there, and she has these WHO documents that, you know, a couple of people sent out, and it was from 1972, and it does have some really important information on virus associated immunopathology, animal models and implications for human disease. And that's actually on Dr. Carley's site. You can go to drcarley.com, and she has them posted there, and implies that these papers from 1972, basically that's what they are. This part one and two, virus-associated immunopathology, animal models, and implications for human disease. They're fascinating. It's a lot of medicalese. To me, when I read through them, it showed that they knew exactly what these injections were doing, and that it did induce autoimmunity, where the immune system attack, where we, our bodies are basically attacking itself and causing all kinds of problems. But they did this in animal studies. They did this in the Aborigines in Australia, and then they monitored and watched them. And these guys are sick. All I could come away with was that they wanted to do further research, and it was just It showed that these people lacked the God spirit that we were born with. Somehow it got diverted, something happened, the devil took over, but it lacked any type of, it's like, wow, what, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I think you should just download these documents yourself, read them. But it proved to me that all the hepatitis is hepatitis A, B, and C. The liver is the master organ, chemical factory of your body, more complicated than your brain, filters your blood. All of these vaccines actually cause hepatitis in one form or another. So this explosion of liver problems in our society can be directly traced to these injections.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they talked about several other things, this whole autoimmunity stuff and things that I could read you a conclusion, but I really, rather than divert ourselves with that, this is back in 1972. They've done further research, and naturally they are making a lot of money off our system of disease scare. We don't have health care. Everything is like opposite with these guys. They're illuminist, and for them they say one thing and it actually means the opposite. So when you talk about health care, it's disease scare. If you talk about, peace, it really means war. It means the peace, or whatever it is, it's like really what they're talking about is the opposite. You always have to also, of course, follow the money. They're controlling everything through this debt-based money system. So when you see certain industries thrive that are promoting death and destruction on the planet, then you know that they're also being funded somehow or encouraged by the people that are creating money out of thin air. So, we could go on that little tangent. But, let's talk about some of this pandemic stuff, because it's absolutely wild. I was just at a meeting tonight, just kind of prepping our community, with our freedom fighters, and said, I just asked for a show of hands how many people have, know that the World Health Organization on June 11th declared a level 6 influenza pandemic. So this level 6 for them is when over 72 countries have proof that there is this new strain that has pandemic potential, where it can spread rapidly. Well, we have very few deaths. The whole thing doesn't make sense. It only makes sense when you understand their agenda for depopulation. Seriously, that is the bottom line. But I'm just going to, share with you some of the stuff I put together in a flyer. Is forced vaccination with an experimental flu vaccine possible in America? Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. Because, as I'll read a little further, they already have this in place, and it's through, what I mentioned earlier, the international health regulations that the WHO had all 194 United Nations member states had to comply with by June 2007. So with that in mind, that involves surveillance of the population, you know, all under the guise of monitoring a disease, a virus is spreading, you know. So, you know, complete surveillance ability, lockdown ability, forced drugging or vaccine ability, all that stuff. And we do have that in place in this country. And we are the model country for the rest of the world with the United Nations and World Health Organization.
Boy.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I'm just telling you, we were the first country, of course. So, you know, anyhow, after they set this, they set in motion the race to create a vaccine to prevent the spread of the novel H1N1 flu virus. Why the rush to create a vaccine when WHO figures reveal that 5 million have a severe case of the seasonal flu every year, and an estimated 250,000 to 500,000 die every year, despite record levels of flu vaccine produced and distributed just last year. As of July 6, 2009, the WHO has cited 94,512 cases and 429 deaths attributed to the new H1N1 flu virus worldwide. This is a fraction of cases and deaths attributed to the seasonal flu each year. The WHO claims the number of cases and deaths are growing exponentially, which is like the hockey stick, you know. I mean, they gradually climb on the graph, and then all of a sudden they take this straight dive upwards, you know, so it has that, you know, angle that goes straight upwards. That's the exponential thing. And they decided to not make these figures available once the number of cases reached 100,000. Which did, you know, soon after July 6th in their, you know, records. And so we're not going to know the worldwide cases. And the CDC just recently followed suit. So our own Centers for Disease Control and the epidemiologists throughout the country are no longer keeping records as to the number of cases. Because for them, it is out of control. And the medical martial law you know, legislation that they have passed needs to be enacted and put in place immediately, and it's not pretty. So this is the scene. Our country is preparing for mass flu shots this fall. There is a 99% probability that the new pandemic vaccine in production will be mandatory. HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius has ordered 600 million doses of this new vaccine, two doses for nearly every man, woman, and child in the United States. Now, state epidemiologists are, of course, recommending two doses of the pandemic vaccine in addition to the seasonal flu shot, just like you said. So it's the three of them. But state officials, I mean, right in a Salt Lake City Tribune article, the state officials are the ones slated with the task of maintaining public confidence in the pandemic flu vaccine program since serious adverse reactions are anticipated. Now, why do you think they have serious adverse reactions anticipated?
Because those that have gotten the vaccine have already died.
Well, no. What are they putting into it? Do you know what they're putting into it?
Oh, well, they're putting something that's likely to cause death, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and it's what they call an adjuvant. An adjuvant is something that boosts antibody production. And they're claiming that they have such a small quantity of the alleged novel H1N1 virus that's circulating the globe. They have such a small amount that they need to stretch it out, and they won't have enough to create a strong immune system for the vaccine to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to boost its immune-enhancing ability to ward off this deadly little bug, as though disease actually comes from a little bug, you know, where it comes from the poisoning of our air, food, and water. Get that real clear here. But anyway, so they have to stretch out with what they call an oil-in-water adjuvant. Remember, an adjuvant is something that boosts antibody production.
Yeah, they got to get the oil in there again, don't they?
Yeah, and the oil is a rather scary aspect of this whole thing because of the really groundbreaking work that Gary Matsumoto did in the book vaccine A, the covert government experiment that's killing our soldiers, and why GIs are only the first victims. Now, this is a book that came out like 4 years ago, and it is groundbreaking, very important. He documents very thoroughly that at Fort Detrick, Maryland, this is where they started experimenting with oil adjuvants in animals. And they tried Freund's oil and several different oils, you know, from vegetable oil, the squalene, which is a fish liver oil, many different, you know, types of oils in animals. And every time they use these oils, it gave a strong immune response at the expense of the whole immune system. And every single lab animal ended up dying after contracting crippling arthritis and autoimmune diseases, you know, but they, you know, died a premature death. It was not pretty. So their conclusion was that, you know, they really could not use this oil-based adjuvant in any form ever in vaccines intended for humans. That was the conclusion.
A couple of rhetorical questions
here, Ingrid.
Do they have a vaccine for car accidents? Do they have a vaccine for toothaches? Do they have a vaccine for broken bones?
Well, they will. They're working on it, I swear. They have one for smoking, I think, in the works, and a cocaine addiction, you know? So, I mean, you never know.
How about for their perversions? You know, for pedophiles, like politicians.
That would be good, and it should definitely have this oil-based adjuvant. I think that would be a really good idea. I think you should market this concept, Don. It would be a really great idea.
Well, I made the suggestion to Dr. Greg Evenson on last night's show that after we fill up the FEMA camps with the politicians, any leftover should be put in the zoos after we let the animals out, and give the janitors leave. So, if you get my meaning.
Wow. You definitely come up with interesting concepts. What can I say?
In fact,
well,
we certainly should have fun
on the show because, you know, I don't want this to be our last laugh together, Don, because this is getting really frickin' serious.
I know it is. You know, you and Don were on the show just a few days before the Olympics in the last year. You've been on since then a couple of times, but it seemed like it was just around August the 5th or the 6th, just a couple of days before the opening day of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And there was this concern that they were going to force these vaccinations upon the athletes and their entourage returning back from China. And we don't know that that happened, but the first thing I heard a professional athlete, a basketball player, say upon coming back to the States, and it was the start of the basketball season, is they got their flu shots. I heard this. In fact, I could tell you it was Mo Williams from the Cleveland Cavaliers that described it. You know, he said, I joined the team and I got my medical checkup, then I got my flu shots. I mean, it just came right out, smooth as silk.
Wow.
And I said to myself, well, there they go. They're going to, you know, and you imagine if they got the type of shot that we're talking about right now, that these guys are huffing and puffing, breathing, sweating, running up and down the court, bouncing the ball around, the ball's all sweaty, it's going into the crowd. What a way to distribute disease in a place with 20,000 people sitting there in a...
Right. Well, that was Truart's hunch at the time, and I actually, you know, I have to admit, I've been so focused on just trying to help people exempt themselves from, quote, required vaccines. And, you know, attorneys, frankly, haven't been any help unless the laws are in place, because the only laws for exemptions that are in place are regarding public schools and child care centers, and the only reason they are in place is because of Christian Scientists. Most people don't know that, but if it weren't for the Christian Science Church in all 50 states, they were successful in 48 of them, you know, putting some kind of religious exemption in the state.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have any exemption laws at all. After they started, you know, the forced vaccines of smallpox, and there was a Jacobson versus Massachusetts decision in 1905 where the Supreme Court ruled that public health could override individual rights when it comes to, the benefit of the whole population in terms of you being vaccinated. I mean, most people don't even realize that. I forget, I think it was Matthew Jacobson. Don't quote me. No, that's Massachusetts versus Jacobson. But anyway, I forget his first name, so don't, yeah. Okay, let's don't go into his first name. But I do, this guy was a pastor. I do know that. And his whole family was, this smallpox vaccine was literally a death sentence for him. They had several deaths in their family, you know, directly attributable to the smallpox vaccine. So they were declining, you know, really in large part for medical reasons, but there wasn't a licensed medical doctor anywhere that would ever issue them a medical exemption because that, as anyone knows, has tried to get a medical exemption. It's death of them in their profession. And we already went through that, you know, with my nephew, by the way. That was the impetus for immunization, the reality behind the myth. Walling James, who is actually the founder of Vaccination Liberation, and that's my mother. And it was part of a whole court case that we dealt with in our family in 1982, where the Health and Human, the Health Department and Social Services, and Child Protective Services, rather, they wanted to take custody of my perfectly healthy nephew because he wasn't vaccinated, and it was considered negligence, and that was really the impetus for that scholarly book. But anyway, with that in mind, you know, we're looking at all of this stuff, you know, like the state's power over individual rights, and, you know, frankly, the only way I've been able to even do my thing is outside of law, because I find the legislative process and politics so absolutely vile. I've tried to work on some law changes, even in Idaho. And unless you have a critical mass of public opinion, I find you're constantly swimming upstream. And so even though Idaho has the lowest uptake of vaccines for children in the nation with 57%, the national average is 77%. We have 57% of, we're talking about with a full schedule. That's not necessarily attributable solely to me. We have a activist, in the south part of our state who was amazing with bringing the aborted fetal tissue, angle into the whole argument. You know, a lot of, Christians out there, they have no idea that many of these vaccines are cultured in cell lines that originate from aborted fetal tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So just even bringing that, you know, this whole aspect of cannibalism into the picture, you know, really raises their eyebrows, and it stimulates them to do further research. And once they do further research, they can make the only informed choice, and that is complete abstinence and refusal. But that was a little side trip I did on that too. So back to how serious this.
Well, yeah, and let me share a thought. You know, here we are talking about how we're going to defend ourselves against this attack upon our sovereign physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, and the guy that's pulling this off hasn't broken the seal and shown us his documentation. Barry Rockefeller, let's call him now, okay?
Right.
You know, that in and of itself should nullify, disqualify anything he has signed. And so, you know, my argument is going to stay the same. Where's the birth certificate? You know, show us some documentation. In fact, give us a DNA test at this point. Let's even find out if you're human, let alone, you know, tell us what we have to do. No,
right.
this has gotten really ridiculous.
Well, of course it's gotten ridiculous, but we've asked for the proof of this virus. Do you realize that there's a $10,000 euro award just offering proof of this virus. And he has the same award for the HIV virus. That's the alleged cause of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it goes on and on. We could ask for an award for proving the polio virus, any of these viruses. You know, they always show these pictures of a whole bunch of stuff that just looks like cells, you know, that are, you know, magnified. So, you know, none of this is proof of a unique quality of a virus that isn't, you know, a pleomorphic thing that's, you know, form-changing and according to the medium, which is, you know, Bechamp showed us that this is the truth of the matter, that all of these microorganisms are form-changing based on the medium that it's in. So, you know, our whole focus should be changing the medium, you know, changing the health of the host, changing our bodies, oxygenating, you know, doing aerobic exercise. But, you know, that's why these Rife machines and oxygenation therapies are so, you know, well, they work. They freaking work in all these different diseases because we're focusing on the terrain instead of, you know, killing the microscopic organism, which isn't the cause of the disease at all. It's just the result. So here we're asking for proof that it's not even forthcoming. The whole thing is absolutely, but you're asking for Obama's birth certificate. They haven't provided proof for half the stuff in history. We can't even get Jane Burgermeister to show proof that she ever filed this thing, making a laughing stock of our whole movement. And that's sad, because we have important information to deliver, and it's giving people false hopes that it may be taken care of, and they might not have to do anything. And that's pretty serious to me, because whenever someone takes away responsibility that really is dropped in your lap, when you have important information that most people don't know and it's dropped right in your lap, it's incumbent on you. It's your responsibility to disseminate that in the best way you can. Mm-hmm. And network with other people that are doing the same thing. Especially if, you know, we have a society that all the only information they're getting is from the mainstream media or, you know, you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know, they're getting it in school or they're, you know, it's passed on to them and everyone's just recycling the same propaganda, you know, and you find some different information that's earth-shattering and life-changing and life-saving, it's incumbent on you to share that. So, I really don't believe that it's a good thing to promote, like, Natural Solutions Foundation. They're into this self-shielding thing. We should have the right to self-shield. Well, you know, that's a whole diversion, too. This is ridiculous. The Homeland Security, they've already come out with stuff that they have in their bureaucracy that says, we have the right to be able to fine you $250,000 if you refuse this vaccine, and you could be taken away and forcefully quarantined. Well, that's right in there. All of this stuff. See, they've been checking out what laws are in place nationally and on the state level that they can come down and enact these policies of forced vaccination. And it's been very systematic. And it doesn't look good. I'm just saying it doesn't. But the hope is that we need to do what Jesus told us to do. We need to love one another enough to get off our butt and communicate and get out of our little cubicles and network with people in our community and form alliances. Mm-hmm. You know, this only can happen when we don't have anyone keeping check on our neighbor who is administrating the vaccines. But we have 90% of the population in any given area. We have the whole police force that knows. We have the sheriff's department. We have even the hospital workers and all the healthcare workers know that this is not only experimental, but likely deadly just from the ingredients we know that Sibelius has been ordering. I mean, she just has a brand new order into Novartis Pharmaceuticals and GlaxoSmithKline. Novartis was over 600,000 and GlaxoSmithKline was 300,000, close to $1 billion in just the oil and water bulk adjuvant. That's frightening. I mean, this is an addition to what they've already purchased.
You
and
know,
then,
and
Yeah, and then you know how they want to spread it. Do you know this about MedImmune? Do you know MedImmune is one of the companies?
I didn't know that, but now I do.
Well, no, I'm sorry. MedImmune, have you ever heard of Flumist? This is the snorting vaccine.
Yes, I have.
So this is one of their questions and answers. It's really bizarre. So I don't like injections. I don't want injections. Can I get it any other way? Oh, yeah, we have a solution for you. One of the five companies they've hired, one of them is called MedImmune, and they're the producers of Flumist. Well, part of this new order is, several thousands of dollars to purchase for MedImmune concentrated antigen, which is the virus, of the original novel virus, right? So they're getting a concentrated form of this antigen that's going to be shipped to them, and they're making it live and attenuated, so it could literally spread, you know, like it's not going to be like a killed virus. It's going to stimulate immune response. It's going to be active. It's going to be alive. And they say even with Flumist, which is an active and live annual flu vaccine, that you're contagious for 21 days. Now, that's what we know from the package insert on Flumist that MedImmune produces annually for the flu every year. And there are many activists that felt like they needed to warn everyone in the community. I mean, they were actually offering this Flumist vaccine in grocery stores where they're squirting it up people's nose and you're going shopping right alongside them. I mean, this is the perfect way to spread disease, especially with everyone's body being weakened by the poisoning of our air, food, and water.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? So,
yeah.
You know, and this is one of the companies. So they're getting a concentrated form of the antigen, and so you can have that option. This whole thing is about spreading a pandemic via the solution,
mm-hmm.
which is vaccines for every man, woman, and child, and it'll justify the machinery that they have in place. And
now,
it
you
is
mentioned,
absolutely sick.
Yeah, I have a question from a listener, but before I go into that question, I don't want to forget this. You mentioned GlaxoSmithKline.
Mm-hmm.
That company's got a connection to the Rockefeller family, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there so happens to be a connection to the Bank of Hawaii. In fact, Charles Reed Bishop sold it to Charles Dexter Lufkin in 1901, and eventually, maybe 20 years later, he sold it to SmithKline. So
mm-hmm.
you have a pharmaceutical company owning banks around the world, and so they maintain their pharmaceutical clout and their legislative clout through the money that they control in the banks. I mean, this is obscene what's going on. And these types of connections, you know, people should be beating down the doors of these companies and these individuals that finance these things.
But we're too busy chasing after the debt money. That
yeah.
keeps a roof over our head.
Yes, exactly. I have a question here asking if you're aware of anyone who's filed a suit, a legitimate suit that you're aware of. And where that is. Or, you know, there may be a multiplicity of cases.
I know a friend who did one in San Diego, and Dr. Truewhat has filed one. And if you go to our website, we have a really tight filing, and that's at vaclib.org. Just go to vaclib.org, and then you on the right hand side of the page it'll say swine flu just before cancer vaccine, which talks about Gardasil, and just and that's a huge index of a lot of fantastic information. And right in the middle of the flyer section where Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's flyer is posted and my flyer is posted at the bottom, there is the injunction that anyone can file, and it's a nice, tight, I think it's a 6-7 page document, and you basically plug in all your information. And the reason this is important to actually do in a federal district court is that you are giving notice. You know, people, I mean, there was some discussion that, well, legally, how can you do that because you can't prove damages? And we're saying, no, we're providing the proof of intent to commit damages, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we do have that proof of intent to commit damages. We have a lot of documented science and history as to, you know, even this oil and water advent, which is frightening. And, you know, I mean, my gosh, we have Gary Matsumoto, who wrote this amazingly well-documented and footnoted book. I mean, he's put a lot of time into that. Of course, he doesn't have a journalism career anymore. I wonder why. Because the mainstream press has pretty much shut him out of a career. But
yeah,
he was a believer in vaccines. He was absolutely a true believer until he started doing his investigation. And he still probably believes in the vaccine paradigm, but he was so horrified from what he found regarding just the production of the anthrax vaccine, its whole history of production, and just the history of investigating oil-based adjuvants at Fort Detrick. As a part of that, you know.
Yeah, a couple of points I want to bring up. Early on, when my show first started, I'd say in the first month or so, I had Dr. Larry Wayne Harris on the show. He had written a book called Biological Warfare, and
right.
he described, not just in the book, but in the interview, he described many of his associates. He went to the Ohio State University, where he got his doctorate in microbiology, and he was getting emails and phone calls and letters from former classmates who went back to places like Iraq and Iran and throughout the Middle East, bragging about the bioweapons that they had developed and that they were going to unleash upon us. Now, this is all done in a concerted fashion. This is not one particular company trying to do this. This always has a connection to the Pentagon, to the intelligence agencies, and you know, we're fighting all of this paradigm of control and these hold harmless clauses that are already worked out into the law. I mean, if their medicines are safe, why do they have to be working this into legislation? It's obvious that they're admitting that there is a danger and they don't want to be held responsible. That means someone has asked them to produce these vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
With the intent. I mean, it's there. It's already in the legislation that they've created.
Right.
So, you know, I'm thinking outside the box.
It's very clear. It's very obvious. I mean, you know, Baxter International, you know, the pharmaceutical industry that the World Health Organization seems to be favoring quite a bit now. Here, you probably remember the Canadian press article that exposed that they had an annual flu vaccine that was shipped to 18 countries throughout Europe, and it just happened to be a guy just had that little intuitive hunch, and so he took some of the batch and injected some ferrets, and they all died. And further investigation revealed that it was actually contaminated. They were putting like an H5N1 virus in it. This is an annual flu vaccine,
and that doesn't happen by accident.
Well, that's the whole thing. They have intense security in these labs.
Yeah.
You don't have different viral compounds mixing. You just don't.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was absolutely bizarre. And so, well, the World Health Organization promised to investigate. Well, they never did. They just awarded them more contracts for now the pandemic swine flu. And this was all way before they declared or even thought the swine flu that originated in Mexico was even an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, believe me, there's a lot of big questions about the whole origination in Mexico, you know, being connected to this factory farming of pigs. I mean, the town that it allegedly originated in, a million pigs processed a year without proper environmental, you know, stuff set in place. You know, I mean, the sewage. I mean, can you imagine the sewage in a small town from a million pigs and the slaughtering and the butchering and, you know, all of that? I mean, this is, you know, a town that doesn't have the infrastructure built, the whole water and sewer system is built to contain that kind of waste.
Yeah, I know a particular city on the east coast of the United States that has a big pig population, too. But... And
are
it's
you, are
in
you
the
talking
city.
About the human pigs that live there? Oh,
I'm talking about Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I figured you were talking about the human pigs. You know, we do live in an animal farm, for sure.
Yes. Ingrid, I've got a message here. Some folks, we've got people literally around the world listening, and some of our Russian listeners and some of our military people who do speak English didn't get the web address where they could go to look up this information. If you would please give that out again.
Okay, VACLIB.org. It's short for Vaccination Liberation, .org. You know, I usually give out on the air VaccineTruth.com because it's our networking site, and mm-hmm. you can get to the website that way. VaccineTruth.com, and if you go from there, you can get to the Vaccination Liberation website because we're the sponsor of that networking website, and then you would go down, there's a search engine, you can just search for swine flu. And I should tell your listeners that although it's a little premature, it is Tuesday night, we are launching a new site that will have the latest and best activism that you can do regarding this, and that's called PandemicFluOnline.com. I'm networking with people nationally right now, and it's an umbrella of all of the health freedom groups in America and likely in Australia and other English-speaking countries to create this website of accurate information, but most importantly, the activistic response from the common person. Where, you know, this, we want to have, the injunction up there too. Right now we just have two flyers posted. I'm getting ready to post a third. It needs to be tweaked a little bit. There's a couple typos, a little misspellings, but a gorgeous trifold that some people in Iowa put together. So we're looking at all that literature for educating our community, samples of letters to the editor, because to me, the most important thing we can do to literally save ourselves is saving everyone in our community and state and getting out to the service organizations or in your community and talking about this message. So my activistic response to this, Dawn, is literally going to your existing group, sharing this information and the danger of the swine flu vaccine. In fact, if it's easier for you, go to Pandemic Flu Online right now. It will not be launched officially until the 25th. We are just putting content up there, a lot of content, but, you know, it's taking time. We're going to continually update it, but there are, two flyers up there. One is, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's flyers for download, and then the flyer I put together is Forced Vaccination with an Experimental Flu Vaccine Possible in America, actually. If you're one of the countries that's signatory to the United Nations or, you know, one of those 194 countries, I would say yes. That, you know, so this is very, very serious. You know, we're talking about an accelerated depopulation agenda that's literally, you know, months away. We even have a clock. Matthew Hunt does the Campaign for Liberty internet stuff, and he is doing our website. He also has a website, vaccinefreekids.org. He's our Maryland chapter person, him and his wife, Lori. They're just lovely people, extremely dedicated to the freedom movement. And he actually recorded the conference call that we did with Truot 10 months ago on this very same thing, and it's actually very, very pertinent today. So that's actually on his website, vaccinefreekids.org. The conference call we did, just alerting people that, believe it or not, everything that we've been talking about is like here now, and it's happening, and then everyone, you know, then that winter that happened just last year, they're like, oh, yeah. Sure, it's going to happen. Well, we saw that they were just getting all their ducks in order to unleash what they're doing right now, and they're doing it fast.
Yeah. Well, this is something that we have in common with our listeners around the world. The non-Americans out there that are listening to this show have as much interest in what we're talking about tonight as Americans do. And I'll be damned if somebody's going to stick a needle in me. And you know, if they want to fine me $250,000, I'll pay the fine when they return the $12 billion they stole from a foundation which I'm a member of. We can get into that on another show. So,
right. And what kind of money are we talking about? Are we talking about gold and silver? More
well,
net based. So, I mean, you know, I always want to know, well, what money are you talking about? What security of an asset or wealth, you know, what medium? You know, I mean, this whole thing is so wild because people think these debt notes actually represent something of value, and it's just the opposite. It shows that you're a chattel, that you're literally slave to the national debt, and they spend us into more and more slavery. So all our progeny for generation upon generation would be, you know, their property in lieu of this debt. It's absolutely insane, and we got to throw off these banksters at some point. But, you know, again, that takes, I think it, throughout history, you have to go through enough suffering before you're able to fight to the degree that you should have done, you know, earlier.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, we'll take care of that in due time. And I think we start with the usurper, first of all, Barry Rockefeller. And I ask there, now not just the question, where's the birth certificate, but who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's worth breaking the seal to find out, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we think it's pretty fascinating. I still would love for you to correspond with our prisoner who came out of the blue with that letter. I mean, this is this genius in prison in Ohio, right in the state you live in, by the way, and he's always writing us all this amazing, insightful stuff. Some stuff is way beyond me, my comprehension even, but I was like, I can't stop reading his stuff. Every time he writes, it's like, oh my gosh, we got a letter from him. And when I opened this one, I was like, oh my gosh, that was so killer, because he was like, you know, like, well, we're maybe not there where he is. That, you know, Michael Rockefeller, Obama's father, yeah, we might think that's a stretch. So he starts going through all of his reasons as to why he believes Michael Rockefeller is actually Obama's father. And my jaw just dropped. I was like, we've been talking about that for, what, 5 months, Don?
Yes.
At least?
Yeah. Yeah, and he picked that up in prison. So, you know, I've got a friend who happens to be in prison I haven't met, and I am going to respond to him. I was just too busy to. But I'll sit down and write him a letter and, of course, encourage him to read the Idaho Observer. In fact, we want to put out that message before we end the show here.
Does read. That's why he wrote.
Yeah.
he's a fan of yours, okay?
Okay.
That's why he wrote it to you.
Yeah. I will be writing him a letter. In fact, I'll probably read his letter to me on the show tomorrow night, because this will blow people's minds. Anyone who has gone to my website, directlightproductions.com, and clicked on articles, read The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 7. It's in two parts for easy download, A and B. Read both parts. A lot of people are just reading the first part. You need to read the second part, because that really is the bombshell there. And there's a lot of interesting stuff. There's pictures to look at, and I explain what the pictures are supposed to represent as they were presented to the public some 32 years ago, 40 years ago, actually. 48 years ago, to be specific. But there's been a recurring of the cover-up of this dimension of this story. And it's no surprise to see who's sitting in the throne in the White House right now. It will change your mind, and you'll understand what this argument has been about Hawaii and Kenya. Now, I've got a bunch of people texting me right now, and are you seeing people waking up in the end here? Are we going to stand up and fight and take?
I actually do. People are, you know, we have, that's an amazing thing about humans. There is actually evolution going on that we don't even know about. It's these banksters, these Illuminists, these devil worshippers, whatever, that are always trying to suppress human potential. But I do believe that, you know, especially like just meeting my granddaughter, who to me is a miracle in itself, because I was trying to warn my daughter about cell phone use, the damage from the radiation. She was a rebellious teenager. She was too young to have a child. My granddaughter is amazing. And even though she has a birth anomaly that I consider a classic radiation injury, she's extremely sharp, very bright, very sensitive, you know, and children are naturally very spiritual, and they know intuitively that they're here for a reason, you know, and all of us feel that way, and then it's suppressed as we get older. But the way things are unfolding right now, the human spirit cannot survive as a machine. And so we're literally in a life and death battle for the human spirit, for our spiritual heritage. And mm-hmm. when people start waking up to that sense, my gosh, they're trying to kill not just my body, but my spiritual essence and everything that is beautiful and wonderful about life. And God gave this to us as a gift, this planet and everything about, you know, I mean, when they understand something on that level, mm-hmm. they realize that, you know, they could be dying tomorrow, but it's worth fighting for today. You know, everything is worth a fight. You know, we need to constantly stand up for what is beautiful, truth, righteous, and just. And we owe that to our Creator. Literally, we owe, you know, our fighting for our spiritual heritage and the health and beauty that this planet once was, mm-hmm. And restoring it. I mean, that's really our function here. You know, Well, I've said enough, but you know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, we talk about this every night in some form or fashion, but it bears repeating. I don't mean to steal your thunder.
I probably am not even as articulate as you, but I just, you know, you feel it in your heart. I mean, you know, we're constantly in our head all the time, but when you move your energy into, you know, your heart energy, and you feel the love you feel for people in your life and your surroundings, and you take a walk out in nature and you feel that connection with all of life on the planet, you know there is something beyond just, you know, the normal grind of just, quote, survival in today's insane mm-hmm. world, and that's worth fighting for and restoring on this planet the way it was before mm-hmm. this insanity took over.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't hate people. I hate what people do. And I can see myself at some point handing my dog her leash and letting her hold the strap section and mm-hmm. have a politician tied to the other learning to heal. That would be a good starting point. I have to share.
I think we all have vengeful thoughts, but, you know, I really think it will all take care of itself. I mean, you know, you can't help it. I mean, it's, you know, part of a joke. Yeah. Wait till he has his karma, you know, as you sow, you reap. But, you know, it all takes care of itself. It really does. We just have to put our best foot forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, I think the hardest thing, Don, was, you know, focusing on people that I don't normally gravitate to. People that didn't grow up like me, people that believe all the lies on TV, and I'm like a freak to them. And I was always different. I mean, I grew up in an unusual family that thought mm-hmm. differently. The vaccine paradigm was not part of my foundational belief system like with most people. So,
yeah.
You know, I found myself always the odd one out. And so I tended to be really introverted. So for me, my lesson is to get outside of myself and to listen more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's probably laughing right now. How much have I been listening to you, Don? I think I've been talking and talking and talking and not listening.
Oh, it's okay.
To your
That's why you're the guest on
much.
The show.
But, you know, that is one of my big lessons is to, you know, get into that space of drawing people out and listening to them. You know, everything is a learning and teaching experience. I'm not here to teach as much as I am to learn for my own self. And if I can impart my wisdom to them, so be it. But I need to focus on not just imparting my wisdom to them like I have, I'm this great mm-hmm. master. They're here to teach me, you know. This is, and that's always an important concept to always realize. This is a, you know, a two-way street with everything that you, you know, are doing in society. You know, it's not just a one way.
Yeah. I want to share two things here before we go. We had a caller call into the network to let us know, and you, in case you mm-hmm. hadn't heard of this, that the batch numbers for the flu vaccines in the U.S. is US666. And in the EU, it's EU, guess the number, 666.
666.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised. Love playing with this stuff, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised they didn't use WWW. But
Oh,
yeah. It's amazing. Now, the other point I wanted to mention, you turned me on to the Anastasia book, or books, I should say.
Yeah,
the Ringing Cedar series.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And those are wonderful books, and I've been reading.
What book are you on, Don?
I'm on book 3 right now.
Good. Space of Love. Uh-huh. Great.
With all the work I've been doing, I've been able to get into book 3.
Good.
There is a minister. Now, I'm going to switch gears for a moment. There's a minister out of Harlem in New York. His name is Pastor James David Manning. And he has been putting out YouTube videos. They're 10 minute or so videos of his thoughts on the usurper. He's given him the nickname the long-legged Mac Daddy. I spoke with him today for about a half an hour, and I'm going mm-hmm. to be bringing him on the show pretty soon. He's a black man interested in bringing white people and black people together, because like me and Drew Raines and Greg Evenson and probably you and Don, we sense a race war that they're trying to promote through mm-hmm. all of this division that they're creating economically, and so he's going to be coming on the show. You should pay attention to what he's saying. I think you find it very interesting, and you can probably put something out in the paper.
We've talked about this whole race war stuff, and that they've been stimulating, and I don't really see it so much up here. It's really strange. We have such a strange little enclave here. I mean, we're mm-hmm. in what we call, you know, white supremacist land. I mean, we had quite a reputation from, you know, from this church that was a while back, Butler. Mm-hmm. Anyway, throughout the world, when anyone says, you know, we live in this particular area, they always bring up the Aryan nations and this white supremacist area.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Human Rights Task Force, the Anti-Defamation League, and all these people have also been influential in the area. And so we've had clashes over the years. I don't know. It's really fairly homogenized. It's really strange. We're seeing a lot of illegal immigrants coming to this area more than we ever have before. You know, I mean, you can tell a Mexican family in the grocery store. And I, you know, this is the first time I've seen so many of them in Coeur d'Alene, and they're finally up near where we are in Spirit Lake. And I haven't seen them in Sandpoint that much. We have quite a few black cops, or African-American, to be more politically correct. Just about every police force in all of our small towns is hired an African-American police officer, which is very interesting dynamics. I know my co-director with Vaccination Liberation. He's a black Puerto Rican. He speaks Spanish. He was nervous about moving up to this area, but he is such a wonderful, you know, gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
He does really well here. He's working for Dr. Len Horowitz now with his wife, and they do really well here. But I mean, he told me little instances. He didn't even detect it as a racist incident, and I did. I mean, because I'm really very sensitive to that kind of stuff and games
yeah.
people play. But, you know, we're very close. So, you know, we don't see it to the degree like they would others. We are sheltered from some of the economic fallout because we are still getting the influx of Californians that were able to make enough money off the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And they move to this area to get away from California, and they spend whatever they could get off the housing bubble on property here. The property is still quite inflated. It's only slowly stabilizing, but not really dropping that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's still quite a desirable area. And we have more of the homeless population in Spokane than anywhere, and it's increasing in Coeur d'Alene. But from all the reports I hear from other parts of the country, it's not, I mean, we are definitely an exception. And I actually shouldn't say that on the air. My husband's probably going to beat me because he'll go, God, everyone's going to start moving here.
Well, what you're describing, we could do a whole show on. It's a reflection of the corruption in the real estate industry mm-hmm. and the derivatives and hedge funds.
Right. But you brought up the race war, and it's just, I couldn't help but go back to just,
yeah,
we're not seeing it right here. It's not affecting us like I would say in other parts of the country. But I know that is something they've been, I mean, it just because they already played that card here so much, people are so tired of it, it's like they're guarded about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did it in the 60s, and it looks like they're doing it again. In fact, several of us made this prediction back in June. We could see this coming down the pike. And some incidents have occurred across the country already.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Manning, being a black minister, says there is no such thing as an African American. You're an American. He says, if you're
right.
African, go back to Africa. This is a black man saying that.
I actually was corrected just recently. I was referring to someone as a black person, and they said they were continually saying African American, and I was like, whatever, it doesn't really bother me. But it was kind of interesting because I think these policemen, there's we ran into one just in Coeur d'Alene, they patrol the art show. They have an art walk on Friday nights in the summertime in Coeur d'Alene.
Mm-hmm.
On the main drag, and all the art galleries open up and have wine tasting, and it's, you know, kind of a thing to do, and, you know, the restaurants are all overflowing, and so they patrol the area on their bicycles, and yeah, I noticed, of course, they have their black cop there, and in Spirit Lake, my husband was pulled over one time by him, and I guess they, you know, got, I mean, they have all their license, and they go back and they check who he is. They get all nervous, and you know, Don's not really, you know, like a 6'4" guy or anything. But
yeah.
And this guy is really—he is 6'4", and he was very apologetic and even intimidated by Don. Like, you know, like it was really a strange encounter. Don said, because Don is very warm and friendly, and you know, apologetic, but the whole dynamics of the interaction was very odd when Don explained it later.
Yeah.
And this was, gosh, that was about 8 months ago, I think.
Yeah. Well, Ingrid, we're out
no
of time.
Okay.
We've got to end the show, but I want to direct people to your newspaper website, Idaho-Observer.com. And,
that's right.
Tell them about subscribing, how they can get a copy
okay.
of the paper.
You can... you can do it online. Foreign subscriptions are $50 a year, or $35 a year in the United States, $40 if you want it mailed in an envelope. We are just now doing the final edit and buttoning up the July. I know it's late. We came out late with June, too. We are skipping August, so it is an 11-month-a-year newspaper. And you can read all our articles that are unique to our publication for the past 13 years on the website idaho-observer.com. You can see what we've posted about the swine flu pandemic the last couple months, and you could actually, we've reported on a lot of things that are really fascinating. So any topic that perks your interest, as well as all the fabulous research that Don Nikoloff has done on the genealogical roots of, McCain and
Bush
family, the Scherfs, rather, and, you know, and now Obama. It's really fascinating. And so you can see the way we've taken a lot of his material and turned him into a news story there at idaho-observer.com.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show and for the work that you and your husband, Don Harkins, are doing. And we have official permission, by the way, from Pastor Manning to use the phrase long-legged Mac Daddy. He said he got it from the Holy Spirit. So,
long-legged Mac Daddy.
Yes. And you have to just check out YouTube. Just put Pastor James Manning into YouTube, and you'll come across it. It just flows. Huh. It's smooth as butter.
smooth as butter. Wow.
Yeah. He's okay. quite an interesting individual. Very intelligent man. And
hey,
I have to write
James Manning, Pastor James Manning, huh?
James David Manning. Yes. He's
okay.
From Atla Ministries. That's ATLAH Ministries.
Okay.
Okay.
That sounds interesting. Thank you so much, Don, for having me on. And I'd encourage anyone to download some of these pandemic flyers, read them, make copies, pass them around. And our launch date for pandemicfluonline.com is Saturday. But, you know, go ahead and check it out. It's still new. We're working really fast on it. And there is stuff posted on there that you'll find interesting. Okay?
Yep.
And our flyers are posted there also.
Yes.
Okay.
Ingrid Castle, thank you so much for being on the show. Again, say hello to Don.
I will.
And all my friends out there in your neck of the woods. Thanks for being on the show.
You have the whole fan club. Thank you, John.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Folks, good night. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Ingrid Castle. Visit the website she gave out, VACLIB.org. That's V as in Victor, A, C as in Charlie, LIB.org, or Idaho-Observer.com. Special thanks to Don Newsom and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. And all of our listeners across the world, especially everyone in the military, take care of yourselves, be safe, come back home healthy, and we would love meeting you when you get back. And to the listening audience, oh, and I better not forget Blog Talk and Wind Talkers Radio. Thank you all for carrying this show. You, the listening audience, thank you for tuning in. Join me again tomorrow night when my special guest will be Mr. Ken Adachi. And in the meantime...